Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
This is a True Crime in Real Time update from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
The tension in the courtroom was palpable as prosecutor Nicholas McClelland rose to deliver his closing arguments. His measured tone carried the weight of over 7 years of investigation, countless hours of testimony, and the desperate hope for justice for two young girls whose lives were tragically cut short. He opened with a chilling reminder, February 13th, 2017, a day this community will never forget, the day Abigail Williams and Liberty German went for a walk and never came back. The jury sat motionless as McClelland wasted no time driving home the gravity of the case. He framed the prosecution's argument around three critical pillars, the Bridge Guy video, the unspent bullet, and Richard Allen's confessions. Each, he argued, stood on its own as damning evidence, but together they painted an unassailable portrait of guilt. McClelland began with what he called the cornerstone of the case, the now infamous video clip captured by Libby German just moments before her death. The prosecutor described Libby's courageous decision to record the man who would soon become known as Bridge Guy. This, McClelland emphasized, is the moment Abigail and Liberty were kidnapped. He played the video once more for the jury. Grainy footage filled the courtroom, showing a figure dressed in a dark jacket and jeans walking with purposeful strides on the Monongahela Bridge. Then the chilling audio, "Down the hill." McClelland paused, letting the weight of those words sink in. He then addressed the jurors directly. "Libby knew something wasn't right. That's why she recorded this. Her final act was to give us the evidence we need to find her killer." To solidify his point, McClelland highlighted the testimony of Master Trooper Brian Harshman, who spent hundreds of hours analyzing Allen's prison phone calls. Harshman had confidently identified Allen's voice as matching the one heard in the video. "This is not speculation," McClelland insisted. "This is expert identification. And it points directly to Richard Allen." Next, McClelland turned to the unspent .40 caliber round found between the girls' bodies. He reminded jurors of the prosecution's forensic expert, who testified that the bullet had been cycled through Allen's Sig Sauer pistol. "This bullet," McClelland stated, holding it up for the jury to see, "was left behind by the killer, and that killer is Richard Allen." The prosecutor methodically walked through the ballistics analysis, explaining how the unique markings on the bullet matched those produced by Allen's gun. He also preemptively addressed the defense's critique of the forensic process, dismissing it as an attempt to muddy the waters. "The state's expert didn't just test this once," McClelland said. "The results were confirmed multiple times by the technician and her supervisor." He then pointed to Allen's own admissions during police interrogations when confronted with the bullet. When asked how his bullet ended up at the scene, Allen had no answer. "Because there is no innocent explanation." The final piece of the prosecution's case was perhaps the most damning. Allen's own words. McClelland methodically laid out a series of confessions Allen made while in custody, both to mental health professionals and in recorded phone calls with his wife and mother. He played a recording of one such call. The courtroom was silent as Allen's voice echoed, "I did it. I killed Abby and Libby." His wife's voice, trembling, responded, "No, you didn't." But Allen persisted, "Yes, I did." McClellan seized the moment, turning to the jury. These were not the words of a man under pressure. These were the words of a man who knew what he had done and was finally admitting it. He also recounted the testimony of Dr. Monica Walla, a psychologist who had met with Allen during his incarceration. According to Walla, Allen provided chilling details of the crime, including how he ordered the girls down the hill at gunpoint, his intention to sexually assault them, and his ultimate decision to kill them after being startled by a passing van. These are details, McClellan emphasized, that only the killer could know. To further drive home the reliability of these confessions, McClellan addressed the defense's claim that Allen's statements were the result of mental instability. He pointed to testimony from Dr. John Martin, a psychiatrist who treated Allen in prison, stating that Allen was not exhibiting signs of psychosis during key moments of his confessions. He knew exactly what he was saying, McClellan asserted, and he knew why he was saying it. As he neared the end of his argument, McClellan turned the jury's attention back to the victims. He displayed photos of Abby and Libby, vibrant and full of life, contrasting them with the grim crime scene images that had been shown earlier in the trial. These girls had their entire lives ahead of them, he said, his voice heavy with emotion. But in their final moments, they showed incredible bravery. Libby's quick thinking gave us the evidence we needed. Now it's up to you to use it. He concluded with a plea. Richard Allen lived among us for 5 years, hiding in plain sight. He thought he had gotten away with it, but justice has a way of catching up. Ladies and gentlemen, Abby and Libby can no longer speak for themselves, but through their bravery, they've given us everything we need to hold their killer accountable. I ask you to find Richard Allen guilty on all counts. The courtroom remained silent as McClellan returned to his seat. The defense was about to respond, but the weight of the prosecution's case hung heavily in the air. Each juror sat with furrowed brows, the enormity of their task clear. The defense took the floor with a strategy that was equal parts rebuttal and assault on the prosecution's case. Brad Rossi, Richard Allen's lead attorney, approached the jury with a quiet confidence. His goal was clear: dismantle the prosecution's narrative piece by piece, leaving jurors with reasonable doubt. Ladies and gentlemen, Rossi began, the prosecution has spent weeks painting a picture, but pictures aren't facts. Today we're going to talk about what they didn't show you, the gaps in their story, and the dangerous assumptions they've asked you to make. He outlined his approach with four main pillars: a broken timeline, flawed forensic analysis, coerced confessions, and the prosecution's failure to exclude other suspects. Rosie's first target was the timeline of the crime. The state wants you to believe that everything happened within a very narrow window, he said, pacing in front of the jury. From 2:13 p.m., when the infamous video was recorded, to 2:32 p.m., when Libby's phone stops moving. But is that timeline supported by evidence? No. He reminded jurors of testimony from digital forensic expert Stacy Eldridge, who revealed a critical anomaly. Someone plugged a headphone jack into Libby's phone at 5:45 p.m., and it remained connected until 10:32 p.m. If the girls were dead by 2:32 p.m., who was using Libby's phone hours later? Rossi asked, letting the question linger. He also pointed to the testimony of searchers who combed the area on the night of February 13th, finding nothing. You've seen the crime scene photos, Rossi said. How could multiple search teams miss two bodies lying in the open? Is it possible the bodies were moved later? Rossi then moved to what he called the prosecution's magic bullet, the unspent .40 caliber round found at the crime scene. This bullet is the cornerstone of their case, he said, holding it up. But their own forensic process is flawed. He reminded jurors of the testimony from Dr. Aaron Warren, a defense ballistics expert who criticized the methodology used by the state's lab technician. Dr. Warren told you that comparing a cycled, unspent round to a fired bullet is like comparing apples to oranges. The marks are different. Rossi argued that the prosecution's expert had overstepped, drawing conclusions from inconclusive data. And yet, he added, they want you to believe this bullet ties Mr. Allen to the crime scene. But where's the corroboration? No DNA, no fingerprints, no trace evidence on that bullet. Just a questionable match based on subjective analysis. He reminded jurors that another .40 caliber Sig Sauer pistol was owned by Brad Weber, a nearby resident. Did the state exclude Weber's gun? No, Rossi declared. They tested it, but their analysis couldn't rule it out. Rossi then turned to Allen's confessions, which the prosecution had presented as a linchpin of their case. The state would have you believe that these statements are proof of guilt, Rossi said, shaking his head. But what they haven't told you is how these confessions were extracted. He walked the jury through Allen's time in solitary confinement, 13 months of near-total isolation in an 8-by-12-foot cell. The conditions were barbaric, Rossi said, his voice growing more intense. Mr. Allen was deprived of human contact, natural light, and basic dignity. He was driven to psychosis. Rossi played a video showing Allen in his cell, naked and smeared with feces. Does this look like a man capable of giving a coherent, reliable confession? He asked, letting the disturbing image hang in the jurors' minds. He highlighted testimony from Dr. Stuart Grassian, an expert on the psychological effects of solitary confinement, who explained that Allen's behavior was consistent with someone experiencing severe mental deterioration. His brain chemistry was altered, Rossi said. He didn't know what was real anymore. Rossi argued that Allen's confessions were unreliable, pointing to inconsistencies in his statements and the influence of his mental state. When you hear someone say, I think I did it, that's not a confession. That's confusion. That's a man grappling with delusions. Finally, Rossi turned to the question of other suspects. He singled out Brad Weber, the local resident, whose van was reportedly seen near the crime scene. Weber's timeline is inconsistent, Rossi said. He told police he went straight home after work, but that's not what the evidence shows. And his gun? The state couldn't rule it out. He also criticized the state's investigation for losing hours of interview footage and failing to conduct a proper height analysis of Bridge Guy in the video. They want you to believe Bridge Guy is Richard Allen. But where's the scientific analysis to back that up? They didn't do it because it wouldn't support their narrative. Rossi ended with an emotional appeal. Ladies and gentlemen, this case is riddled with doubt. The state wants you to fill in the gaps with assumptions, but that's not justice. That's speculation. And in our system, speculation is not enough to convict. He stepped back, letting his final words sink in. The prosecution has not proven their case beyond a reasonable doubt. We ask you to find Richard Allen not guilty. With the defense resting its case, the weight now shifted to the jury. It was up to them to decide whether the evidence presented was enough to convict, or if the defense had successfully planted the seeds of doubt. As the jury begins their deliberations, I can't help but reflect on the sheer weight of what's at stake. On one hand, you have the prosecution's case, a damning series of confessions, the eerie Bridge Guy video, and the bullet they claim ties it all together. On the other, the defense's fierce attack on every piece of that puzzle, urging the jury to see doubt where the state insists there is certainty. For me, this trial has been a stark reminder of just how fragile and complex the pursuit of justice can be. The confessions are haunting, no question about that, but when you consider the conditions Richard Allen was subjected to, 13 months of isolation, severe mental health deterioration, can we really take his words at face value? The defense makes a strong case that those confessions are as much a product of desperation as they are of guilt. And then there's the bullet. If you listen to the prosecution, it's an open and shut piece of forensic evidence. But the defense pokes some serious holes in that theory. When one expert says, this bullet definitely came from Allen's gun. And another says, not so fast, the methodology is flawed. How does a jury reconcile that? At the heart of this, though, is the emotional weight, two young girls full of life had their futures stolen. The prosecution made sure to remind everyone of that. But justice isn't just about emotion. It's about facts, evidence, and certainty. And in this case, there's a lot of uncertainty to go around. So here's the question I'm left with. In a case like this, is justice served by pushing for a conviction despite the doubts? Or does true justice demand we hold the state to an even higher standard, ensuring there's no room for error? That's all for now. We'll keep digging and bringing you the facts.
In a world where the darkest secrets lie just beneath the surface.
They said it was an accident, but the evidence says otherwise.
Where hidden killers roam unnoticed in the shadows.
I think you would definitely be looking at a blend of toxic, very bad narcissistic personality traits, and they will be vengeful and possibly resort to violence.
Join Tony Bruschi as he uncovers the truth behind the most chilling cases.
They said it was an accident, but the evidence clearly says otherwise.
Each episode, we dig deep into the minds of those who commit the unthinkable.
To your point on narcissism, he thinks in his own mind how witty he is.
Yeah.
But he lost that jury. I was done with him in 2 minutes.
From unsolved mysteries to infamous crimes.
Geez, you've just talked about how you've taught yourself how to do everything under the sun. I bet you did a YouTube video, how to best kill somebody with a knife.
Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi takes you where few dare to go.
How does someone with such a dark secret go unnoticed for so long?
With multiple new episodes every single day.
We're not just telling stories, we're seeking justice.
Listen now on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9, selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9, selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9, selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9, selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9, selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9, selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.